This is On the T-Box on THP Radio,
your number one source for golf equipment news.
Here's your host, the Dean of THP.
And there it is. Welcome everyone to THP Radio for another exciting episode of On the T-Box, sponsored by US Kids Golf. I'm your host, Dean, and back to co-host this episode with me is my fellow staff writer, James. And as always, you can check out James's review articles on the THP homepage, and he can be reached both on the THP forum as well as on Twitter under the handle @jman_THP. James, welcome back to THP Radio for another go-around of On the T-Box.
Well, hello, Dean. I'm ready to go. I'm excited to be back again. Always fun. It's becoming more and more fun, which is always good.
It is. We're really starting to hit our groove, and we've got a good show tonight. But before we get to that, let's give our listeners, especially our first-time listeners, an idea of what this show is all about. On the T-Box is a golf podcast that's going to be based on equipment, apparel, accessories, and anything else interesting that might come across our review desks. Today, we have four topics on our sheet that we're just waiting to tee off. Those topics include Toulon putters, Cobra drivers, especially the F6 lineup, the new Z5 grips from Lampkin, and we're going to give you a quick look at the new Srixon drivers that we have in hand. So with that said, it looks like the starter's calling our name, and James, we are now on the tee box. You know, you and I are both familiar with Sean Toulon, his past, a successful run at TaylorMade Golf. Last year he retired, and then essentially, you know, Sean, he just couldn't sit still. So he and his family decided to start a putter company, which they called Toulon Design. We spent quite a bit of time on THP talking about Toulon and talking with Sean, and we've actually been out to their headquarters and posted up some videos. For those who aren't familiar with the company, though, why don't you give us a quick background on what they are all about?
Yeah, it's actually a really, really neat story. Sean was done and quite happy, I think, probably tinkering with his cars because, as he's told us on multiple occasions, he's a very big car guy. And his kids kind of came to him and said, well, you know, what about putters? His big thing with it from the very beginning, and he's been adamant to this day, is he didn't want to do something and he didn't want to get into putters unless it was something different and that they could accomplish something that would actually improve games, not just putting out a putter to put out a putter, which me, as being a big putter guy, I can vouch it's a scary market for somebody to try to get into, especially boutique putters, high-end putters. It's obviously dominated by a couple of big names. And beyond that, trying to jump directly into that, if you don't have a namesake or something to go behind it and some pull, if you will, as far as history, it's just one of those things that you got to be really careful about. But they've gone through all the right steps, and man, it's a heck of an operation, really.
Yeah, it really is, and it's kind of taken off rather quickly. Like you said, it's a daunting task to get into that premium, you know, boutique putter market. There are some other big names out there, like we know. And we've talked about it on one of the other THP shows. The Dean have spoken, talk about where they could be in a few years. You know, can they withstand where they can get in, you know, in sales figures? And I don't think it's impossible to imagine them, you know, chipping off of, you know, from Bettinardi and seeing them, you know, pick up market share in there and sell as many putters as they need to do to be successful for the next decade.
Oh, absolutely not. And I've got to admit, I met it with a lot of trepidation because you kind of, the PGA show, there was a lot of buzz about Toulon and him being back and the product that they had. I mean, not just the name. I mean, there was buzz around the product. So it was kind of a wait and see how things were going to go. And slowly they've unrolled, you know, they've brought all these different parts of their company to market the right way. They didn't do it all at once. The garage, I mean, look at the Toulon garage. It took them months to get it right before they really started rolling it out. And right now, you see a ton of it on there. They're getting really good at social media. Their packaging is one of the best I think I've probably ever seen. The Masters and PGA Championship and the Open Championship and the US Open head covers that they've done are stellar. And it's all these little things that go into it around the putter that they're doing right. And I think that's what's really going to allow them to make a foothold that a lot of other companies maybe have not been able to do. I mean, you look at somebody like a Peretti, for example. We look at Henrik Stenson just winning. I mean, Peretti tried to capitalize on all this. They tried to make that foothold. I mean, they had Henrik Stenson playing their putters in front of everybody, but they couldn't do it. But you see Toulon doing it the way they are, and they may not have the big names rolling them right now, but they're attacking it from the correct angle as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, they are. And you mentioned the garage, and we're going to touch base on that in a few minutes here. I want to go back to what you originally said when we first brought the topic up about, you know, Sean Toulon saying, I'm not just going to create a putter. I want to do something that's a little different. And knowing that you reviewed Wood, I want to ask you about, you know, the Deep Diamond milled face, you know, in terms of feel, in terms of sound. I know they're, you know, interlocked. You know, the look of it is pretty darn cool. But there's actually some performance benefits behind it as well.
Oh, yeah. I got to review the Madison Garage version in the black finish. That was the big thing coming into it I wanted to see the focus on, because I've owned and we've seen come out a lot of grooved putters, a lot of face milling, a lot of different techniques there that go with it. But Sean being so adamant that they wanted something different that would make a quality impact on performance overall, it made you want to really focus in on it. And what it is there's two parts to it. Unlike most face milling, where it's just grooves in a specific pattern, there's two different patterns with this one. The first part is the major portion of it. When you just first glance at it, you see the diamond milling across of it. It's the deepest portion of it. Those channels are to control the sound. And then inside those channels, there's actually smaller milling that goes with it, and those are to control the roll. And I've heard them compare it to like a tire tread before, and it makes a lot of sense. As far as the sound goes, it's the hardest sound to describe that I've had in any putter review. I'll put it that way. How did I word it before? It's solid, but it's plush. It's got this feeling and impact of really what most people are going to call soft, but there's still a little bit of firmness to it. And the feedback is actually really phenomenal. But better than that, the roll is really good. And I tested it all over the grooved pattern, and the retention of direction and the retention of pace was really, really impressive.
Like I said, it looks cool, but the performance benefits are certainly there. And then if you turn the putter over, you know, they have the sole weight on the bottom. And off the top of my head, I'm thinking they have, what, three different sole weights that can go in there: aluminum, tungsten, and I think the other one's just a kind of stainless steel.
Stainless steel, yeah. Aluminum's the lightest, stainless is next, and then tungsten is the heaviest.
Yeah, so they have a lot of tech built into these gorgeous putters of theirs. And then on top of that, you know, you could get, you know, the custom putter from the garage or the garage treatment. You could really build one heck of a putter. And it's funny, on their website, they have like an order form, and it's 10 different things you could do. You know, you can go from the putter head model, which, you know, they have 5 different models. You can choose the type of hosel that goes into it, the finish, the alignment aids, where it is, the different paint fills, the stamping, the grip, the shaft, the loft. It's crazy what they've got going on here for the garage. And the garage logo, by the way, is also really, really cool. Like you said, they've really evolved as a company just in this short amount of time. You know, those little touches, they definitely add up.
Oh, yeah. And the branding is, it's really, really good. It's impressive. It's catchy. It catches your eyes. It makes you want to look at what's going on with it, especially social media, seeing the garage logo, like you said, whenever they put it up, you want to check out what else they have coming with it. But the putters are versatile. And more than that, the price point is actually really good for what you get in the garage as far as customization. You can get with a lot of different putter companies. When you start getting that customized, that you are going to hit some numbers that will make a lot of people pass out as far as price point. And here it's because the techniques and the technology overall that they're using, like the vacuum brazing, it allows them to do all these different things, all these different necks, all these different finishes, and make it accessible to the people at actually a really good timeline too. The turnaround's really good.
Yeah. You know, at the PGA show, when they were talking about what they were going to go through the process for the garage and showing the different necks that they were going to be able to put on, and it was really cool, and it's exciting to see this company really grow. And a shameless plug here for THP Radio, Sean Toulon did stop by on the Golf Industry Uncut earlier in the year. So if you haven't given it a chance to listen, make sure you go to either iTunes or Google Play Radio. Look up the podcasts, look for the Golf Industry Uncut. It really is a great episode because Sean's had such a an interesting career and a very well done career throughout this industry, coming from TaylorMade and now the story behind Toulon putters. So if you're into these putters, make sure you give that one a listen. I really think you'll like what you hear. Let's move on to topic two. We've talking about the Cobra drivers, specifically the F6 line. We can mix in the King line. You've been one that's hit all three of them. I've been one. I spent some time with the F6 over at Club Clash, and I've got the F6 Plus now, getting some swings in with that one. At the PGA show, you know, we talked to Mike Yagley about all the different combinations that you can create with the F6 Plus and with the F6, moving the weight around, and then obviously the science behind the King LTD. So let's start really with the F6, kind of their meat and potatoes driver. You spent some time with that. You reviewed it for the homepage. Let's hear about it.
Probably the most underappreciated driver of their lineup, I would say. Especially you and I were both at Club Clash, and we got to see a lot of people hitting it. And kind of like I mentioned in the review, I think everybody expected it to be the high spin driver, and it's not a high spin driver. I think a lot of people still think back to the Amp Cell. And that was a high spin driver. I think everybody can agree. I played
Guilty.
It. I think you played. Yeah, you played it for a while. I mean, it was a high spin driver. But the F6 isn't. There's a lot of tech that still goes in it. It's simply a higher MOI design. It's going to be the more forgiving driver. It's going to be the driver that launches the ball. Is it going to spin more than the rest of them in the line? Yes. But we're talking a couple hundred RPM. We're not talking thousands of RPM like some people on the internet want to make it out to be. We over-exaggerate everything, but it's not. It's kind of the driver that is going to fit the most people. And it's the one, I'll be honest, out of the three of them that I've owned and bought and traded for and everything else, I enjoyed it the most. Because it fits whatever I need. It's the high launch driver, and that's a good thing for me.
The one thing I'll say about it that stands out, you know, amongst the three, and specifically in the F6 line itself, to me, it's the one that sounds the best. For me, having the F6 Plus now, you know, you and I have joked about it sounding a little bit like a wooden baseball bat. You know, that's mostly because of the crown material and all the carbon fiber that's in that head. This one has a little more traditional ting sound to it. So for me, I like that better, but I wanted something that I could really adjust not only the loft, but really the CG locations. And while the F6 does have, you know, two different weight ports, the F6 Plus really gives you that five different tuning slide there on the bottom. And you can crank that heavy weight from the back all the way up to right underneath the face and see what the MOI is going to do for you.
I swear it's like you're looking at my notes sometime, bringing up all these different things about sound that I was going to get to. No, you're right, though. I would say the F6 is the more traditional sounding driver. It's got that little bit of metallic resonance to it, but it's not loud. It's not obnoxious. The F6 Plus is on the opposite end of the spectrum. And truth be told, I think that's probably why it's kind of going under the radar. I mean, if you think about it, it's such a different sound. And as you mentioned, you and I talked about it a lot. It's like a wooden baseball bat. And I've got a feeling that that's why some people, especially better players, which let's be honest, it's kind of aimed at a better player audience as far as what it can do and the adjustments like you mentioned. I think it probably drives them off because it's not a traditional sound. But as far as the head itself and what it does, it's probably the most underappreciated adjustable driver out there as far as I'm concerned. That's a personal opinion. The track being carbon fiber and not being metal and the weight that they saved there and how that's going to impact what happens whenever you shift the weight from what is it? The front is labeled as penetrating. And I think when you move it to the rear, it's towering.
Yes, towering.
Towering. I like that sound. I need more towering drivers in my life. But because of that carbon fiber track, the weight is going to be more effective. And I mean, that plays a role in the sound of it and all, but that's some really, really good tech.
Carbon crown on the top, you know, the carbon track in the bottom. And that's why, like we're saying, the sound is so different. And with sound translating to feel, it just stands out when you're hitting four or five different drivers at once. You know, you go to the store and you hit four or five off the rack and you hit this one. And especially if you're inside, it's going to sound so much different and it's going to feel so much different because of that. You know, the numbers that we, at least I'm seeing often, and I'm sure you're seeing as well, the numbers are really good. The ball speed numbers are high. You know, you can really dial in the spin rates over time. It's not like you're going to move it from, you know, the back position to the middle and immediately you're going to see 300 or 400 RPMs drop off over time. You probably will. It'll average out like that. But the, you know, it's not like a magic elixir. Well, I'm hitting it, you know, 3,500 RPMs in the front. Let's move it all the way, or in the back. Let's move it all the way to the front and see if I can get it at, you know, 1,600 RPMs. It really doesn't work like that.
Sadly, no, it doesn't. The internet may think you, or may make you think it does, but it really doesn't work that way. But no, it fits perfectly in the lineup. You and I have talked about it a little bit, and I've already used the word underappreciated once. I would say under the radar. I think Cobra in the last 2 years has really made up, like, the releases have come a very long way, very, very quickly. And that's not to say that they were putting out bad stuff. I loved the BioCell. I lived by that driver for a year and a half, but now it's impressive to watch. And it's still kind of under the radar because you see all these big flashy M1 ads, you see all these flashy Great Big Bertha ads, you see all these other ones. And that's not to say they're not good drivers. They're great drivers, but it's interesting still to see Cobra kind of where they are.
The technology that they have in their club lineup from top to bottom, they're an extremely innovative company right now that just kind of gets, unfortunately for them, kind of gets glossed over. You know, M1, people look at this and they say, well, it's an M1 knockoff. It's not really an M1 knockoff. You know, this one has they do similar things, but they get there in much different paths.
Totally different ways.
Yeah.
Their tech is as good as anybody in the industry.
Yeah, their tech is good. So, if you get a chance to get out there and hit them, the F6 or the F6 Plus, make sure you let James and I know what your thoughts are on it. You can send a tweet out to either one of us at JMan_THP or at DeanTHP. Use the hashtag THP Radio and just say this is about the Cobra F6 driver or F6 Plus. Let us know what your thoughts are once you get out and hit that. All right, James, we're getting ready to hit the halfway point, and just want to remind listeners that they can join in on the conversation with us from this episode and many other conversations with thousands of golfers every single day on the THP forum. Like I mentioned before, you could also follow, comment, or post questions to James or myself on Twitter by sending a tweet either to @JMan_THP or @DeanOfTHP using the hashtag THP Radio. We look forward to those. James, got a question for you. You've taken a golf lesson before, right?
I have indeed.
You've taken the time to find a proper instructor that would fit your needs?
Yes, I've gone through many to get there.
That's right. Well, the summer's a great time for your kids to get out there and learn the game of golf. And as part of their mission, U.S. Kids Golf wants to pair up their children with a proper golf coach. That's why they have certified professionals who have a great way to communicate and work with your kids. These pros can help pass on the etiquette, rules, and of course, playing ability to those interested in partaking in this game. To find the nearest U.S. Kids Golf certified coach, head over to uskidsgolf.com/coaches. All right, James, now a couple of years ago, Lampkin made big waves in the grip department with the introduction of the UTX grip. I know you and I were both enamored with that. Last year, they turned that UTX technology into more of a wrap-style grip, and now they're taking aim at, you know, kind of the ever-popular multi-compound type of grip that we see on the market, and that's with their new Z5. You have some samples in hand, and I know you were a big fan of the UTX, like I said, so I'm really looking forward to your thoughts on the new Z5 grips from Lampkin.
Yep, I've got the Z5 samples in hand, and I'll actually have the review grips in hand tomorrow, and they'll be going on some clubs immediately to get out. You're right. The UTX was a big one for them, and it still is. And it's crazy you mentioned 2 years, because I actually kind of lost track of time and didn't realize that that had been the time frame. But you're right. It's one that went after the traditional cord and did it in a different way and did it really, really well. And I think with the Z5 right now, the teasers came out of nowhere first off, and then all of a sudden here they are. Now they're going after that multi-compound grip. The NDMC is obviously the king of multi-compound grips, but it's got some texture issues for a lot of people. I put it that way. It's like sandpaper.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
So, I was the same way about basic cords. And the UTX changed that because of the way they do the materials and the cord combined. So with this, what you're seeing is their version of a multi-compound grip. And they've actually got 5 zones to it, 5 different parts that go throughout the grip. From the butt section, you have the first two, and it's pattern and cord. So basically, it's like the UTX pattern. It's got that same type of cord. It's that same type of material. So it's not going to be really, really harsh, but it gives you plenty of traction underneath your grip hand. From there, the middle section is going to be, to me, what caught my eye most immediately. It's what they're calling the finger lock panels.
Mm-hmm.
and it's placement positions for your thumbs. So the texture actually changes in order to try to help give more consistency, not only in your grip, but more consistency in your traction in that middle portion where your hands are going to join together in the grip. A very important portion of the grip for everything and part of the golf swing, as everybody knows. And then the last sections are going to be just micro, they call it micro texture. And there's two different textures as you go closer to the very end of the grip. And this is going to be under the non-glove hand, so it's the softest material of the overall grip.
Yeah, the five different zones, it's such a different breakdown of what we're seeing. Like you mentioned, the ones from Golf Pride and the ones from Superstroke, the two different dual decades and multi-compounds. Really, the Zone 3, the one you were talking about, the finger lock panel, when you first posted pictures, that little, it almost looks like a notch in the pictures. That's the part that kind of caught my eye. And without knowing what it was, I was like, oh, that's perfect. That's where my thumb would be. So knowing that that's actually part of their philosophy is to kind of help, you know, maybe with a little grip pressure, maybe a little bit of alignment with your thumbs, whatever it is, it's such an interesting looking grip. It's a little different than what we see out there, but it also looks so close enough that you can be like, oh, well, look, these grips are so similar that it will catch the eye of the person who looks for those other multi-compounds.
Exactly. It looks like a multi-compound grip, which is one of the necessities that they needed. As far as the finger lock goes, yeah, it's one of those ideas that you look at again and you go, well, why didn't I think of that? Because it makes so much sense for to have something in that position of the grip where the hands are going to kind of connect there. But for the looks, I know, and especially on our forum where the discussion's been going on, for those of you that have checked it out or haven't checked it out, there's been a lot of talk about the white and them using white under it. Obviously, for those of you that don't know, red, blue, and black are the three main color choice options. And then there's a white section towards the top hand. And that's a lot like the other multi-compound grips like Dean mentioned. But white shows up, right? I mean, people have got to remember when companies come out with things like this, you want it to be seen. Branding plays a role whether you like it or not. And this is something that's going to be noticed. It's visible. You're going to see that white. It's the same reason Lampkin changed their logo several years ago. You and I were at the PGA show whenever that happened.
You just took that from my mouth. I was just about to say it was the same reason for that.
I was stealing from, yes, I was stealing from your notes this time. But no, I mean, you and I had big conversations about that because neither of us were really fans of the change because it was such a classic logo. Now I look at it and it makes perfect sense because even when you watch TV, if you're watching on HD TV or anything, you can see these different things. Like I can recognize a Lampkin logo now. And on something like this with the white and then the texture of it, and then you add that logo, it's recognizable. And that's an important thing for them. It's a big thing for them.
Absolutely. And you know, you said it right there. The changing of the logo, that was the big reason. You know, they'd have all these pictures of players at the time. It was Justin Rose in their booth, and you have the old logo. You didn't see it very well. And then you have Justin Rose with the, you know, swinging the grips with the new logo. And you're like, oh, wow, that's a Lampkin. It's the same exact theory with going with the white down on the bottom. Visually, to those watching, it stands out. And one thing that we've seen over and over again, what pros play on TV, when that stuff gets picked up by TV and you get to see it over and over and over and over, depending on who the golfer is, it makes you curious whether you're going to go out and buy it. I don't know, but it makes you think. We saw that with drivers, with white-headed drivers specifically. We see it with other grips, and I think we'll see it with this as well. It's going to be something different but familiar, and I think people are really going to like it.
Oh, yeah. And the one other thing that I did want to touch on this one before we go on is another part of the design of the grip that I think is kind of brilliant is they understood that a lot of people like to play their grips logo down. And with this, not only did they add a logo to the other side of the grip down by the butt, so it's not going to be noticed for anybody who doesn't like to look down at a logo. It's still there. It's still going to be seen on TV or anything like that for people who play logo grip down, but it's going to be underneath the top hand. So it makes perfect sense. But beyond that, they built the grip in a way that it's going to be smoother texture-wise if you play it logo down. So if you get the grips and you don't care for the finger lock panels and those things and how that feels underneath your thumb, and you want a more smooth multi-compound feeling that just goes from cord to that micro texture, you can actually install them logo down, and that's how they'll play.
That's interesting. I know I'm one that I usually like to put them logo down, but there are certain grips when I put them logo down, they just don't, you know, feel right. They don't look right. I did not realize that these ones were a, you know, a good possible logo down grip just by looking at the pictures of it. Whatever. I can always do logo up. It doesn't bother me, but I do have a slight preference of logo down.
See, look at me teaching you something.
Yeah, look at that. I learned something today. Why don't we write that one down? All right, James, let's move on to our last, fourth and final topic of the day. And this is something that's kind of a sneak peek for our listeners. A few weeks ago, we saw Strixon kind of unveil their Z65 lineup. And as part of that lineup, you and I have received the Z565 and the Z765 drivers. You know, we've only had them in hand for a short period of time. While we can't really get into the big review process of them yet, I thought it would be a good time for us to get a little bit of information out there, give a sneak peek as what we've come across with these drivers so far.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you've got the 565, which yes. is what it's the 460cc model, correct?
460cc, a little more forgiving, a little more launch, everything that I could, well, maybe not the launch part, but the more forgiveness I could definitely use.
See, and I have the 765, which is, it's actually 445 cc's, so it's a smaller head. It's what they classify being for stronger swingers is the way that they described it. And from thus far, I know we don't want to touch on the review process of it too much because that's coming and the conversation is going on the forum, but it's pretty accurate. I mean, this is going to be, the 765 will be the lower launching, lower spinning driver head. Whereas the 565 is going to be the higher launching and kind of more low mid spinning, right?
Yeah, low to mid spin. It has a little bit of draw bias to it. I've had it out on the course already, and the biggest thing that I've taken away from it is just the consistency. There's not a lot of ball flight movement right to left or left to right, which is very nice. Now, a lot of that is, not to toot my own horn, but a lot of that is always swing, you know, angle coming into the ball. And that day it was me. I was like, oh, wow, I found this driver and I could hit it straight. So that certainly helps. It made me feel good. But it gave me a lot of confidence in this driver head.
Yeah. And I mean, but there's actually, I want people to realize that this, it honestly is not just a rehash of the 745 and the 545 drivers, the cup face. I mean, they've changed their face technology, the step sole system that's going into it that's aimed at helping ball speed retention on shots that are hit lower on the face. I haven't really got to test that out a whole lot yet. I've been living more on the toe and the heel and testing that portion of it. But there's a lot more tech into it. And for me with the 765, this is that smaller head, polished paint job, classic black, clean, streamlined driver that's going to be a throwback for a lot of people. And I think it'll catch a lot of eyes. I mean, they describe it as a stronger swinger driver. And I think that's kind of the type of player that'll flock to it more just visually too.
Yeah, it's, you know, you mentioned the Power Wave sole. Unlike you, I've been living on the bottom of the driver for probably the last 3 months. So when I saw that was part of the technology on this one was really going to be low face performance, you know, I got a little giddy about that. And so far, it's held true to its word. I mean, we'll definitely touch on that more on the forum and in the review process. Driving, I should say, the engine driving these is, of course, the shaft. And we see Miyazaki back in the mix here. I haven't played a Miyazaki shaft in a while. It's been a long time, actually. I tested them a little bit in the 355 series, putting the cool, what is it? It's the Kuala. I can't even say it right. The shaft this one. It really reminds me of a throwback to the Kusala, not the Kuala, the Kusala blue shaft from 5 years ago. And that made me really, really happy. Now, the one that's in the 765 driver, do you think that one would have played more to what people would remember as the Kusala Black or something else that we've seen in Miyazaki lineup?
No, I actually think it plays a lot to the blue too, believe it or not. That was one of the first things, and it was funny reading your thoughts of it on the forum in on the 565. That was one of the first things that I noticed out of the 765. It reminds me a lot of that. And it's good to see Miyazaki back in clubs. Especially after their big push to try to make it over here. And yeah, there was a lot of extenuating circumstances to why I don't want to say it didn't stick, but it didn't spread would probably be a better way. I still think the International Flex Code is the most brilliant thing done on shafts as far as identifying ball flight and everything and what the shaft is supposed to do and making it easy to understand. But yeah, no, it played like a blue to me. It's it reminded me of it a lot, actually. And I've still got one in there somewhere with a tip on it. And it was kind of eerie.
Now, just another thing I mentioned on our forum, and it has nothing to do with the performance of the club. It's just going to be my gripe with Strixon and Cleveland. It is the wrench that they use. I hate the square peg at the end of that wrench. I wish it matched up with every other wrench that I have in the bag so that I don't have to carry an extra one with me. You know, you go to the course with it and you forget the one proprietary wrench and you can't really change anything. That kind of bugs me a little bit.
Well, not only that, but the wrench is huge.
Oh, it is huge.
I mean, it is. It just is. It's huge. That's always confused me. I'll actually go a step further. And again, it's not a slight on the driver and the performance of the driver in any way. But it kind of relates to that with that square wrench is the actual tip, the cog. I am not a fan of Strixon Cleveland's adapter. I'm just not. It's so, even if you look at the manual that comes with the drivers, it's so confusing is a good way to put it as yes. far as the adjustments that are on it. There's multiple levels of numbers and lines and everything on this one little adapter. It's kind of like I feel a lot about it like I do with Titleist adapter. I feel like you need a encyclopedia to be able to go through it and be able to set it up the proper way. And I know a lot of people are going to set it and forget it, but it's just one of those things with what we have right now with so many good adapters and so many good options there. I would like to see them make it easier to digest. That's probably a good way to put it.
Yeah, that is a good way to put it. Confusing was a word that I would put it. Oh, it's hard to tell exactly what every little step is on that adapter. And yes, there are, you know, the plus one and the minus one, but in between that, there's a whole bunch of lines. You kind of need the booklet to figure it out. It gets a little, like you said, confusing. Water gets a little muddied and then you're not sure. Find your setting, yes, and go on. But part of the draw of the adjustable drivers is getting fit either by professional or self-fitting, which I bet majority of us do. And to have an adapter that's maybe not as intuitive as we've seen with some other ones out there, it kind of does not allow you to do that in the easiest fashion possible.
And I know we look at it differently because of what we do, and part of checking all that is on our to-do list, if you will. But it kind of takes away from the whole thing. It's one thing that you don't need, you feel like you shouldn't have to worry about, but you do kind of in the back of your mind worry about. Because did I open the face 1 degree or 2 degrees whenever I lofted it, because those are both options,
right?
You know, did I close the face 1 degree or 2 degree? Is it upright now? It's just, there's a lot going on there that I really think could be simplified.
Yeah, it really could. But you know, as I said, want to make sure all the listeners out there keep an eye out to the THP homepage for the official review of both of these drivers and the rest of Strixon's new lineup of clubs. And if you'd like to follow along with our updated thoughts, you can do so on the THP forum. Just look for the thread with the title of the club and look for THP review thread. We'll have a lot of information as we prepare our reviews for all of that. And with that, that's going to be a wrap. A big thank you to James for co-hosting today. Remember, you can join us both on the THP forum to discuss and debate everything we talk about here. And of course, follow along on Twitter at @DeanOfTHP for myself and at @JMan_THP for James. Don't forget to head over to iTunes or Google Play and subscribe to the Hackers Paradise podcast channel. That way you'll never miss a new episode of The Golf Industry Uncut, The Dean Has Spoken, or the show you're listening to right now on the T-Box. And while you're at it, take a minute to leave your feedback on the variety of shows that we offer. For myself and James, we hope you enjoyed this episode, and we look forward to meeting you again on the T-Box.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your #1 source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.